And we're live.
Hello, and welcome back to another candy-coated episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
This is Walter Vinci.
This is Romano De Sola.
And what we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com, and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us, and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. In this episode, we will be talking about Disney's latest 3D animated movie, Wreck-It Ralph. But before we get into that, it's time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. And Walter?
I wish I could have been here on Halloween. I was out giving candy, dressed as Bane, which was a hell of a lot of fun, actually. I revisited Cloud Atlas.
Yes?
And after watching it, I said, why did I bother doing this?
Really? Yeah, so we had to edit in your comments since
it was done
post-recording.
Post-recording, I had to say that I liked this movie less the second time around than I did the first time.
Wow.
A lot of the stuff that was that caught my attention in the first movie was really glaring to me in the second time I watched it. First being no continuity between storylines. One of the storylines is still a book and not an actual person.
I'm sorry, what do you mean by that?
That would be the... I actually have all the stories here. The Diary of... It says it's written as the...
The first step, the first series?
The first one. The Pacific Journal of Adam Ewing.
Okay.
You've given me no... other than the fact that the characters all kind of look like other people that show up later in the movie, there's no connection given to any of them in the movie later on. It's as if somebody's reading a book of these other characters and just kind of just imagining what these people look like, which is why, you know, they take on like these other... looks about them. And to answer your question, you had mentioned in the prior podcast why is his name escaping me? Who Megatron was?
Hugo Weaving.
He's actually the conductor, Thaddeus, the conductor from Germany, who only shows up and he talks about how great the sextet is,
yes.
And then disappears
okay.
for the rest. But I don't think he really stays a villain throughout the movie. But anyway, the disconnection between all the stories is still really glaring to me. There's no explanation of any of the comet things other than the fact that somebody was like, oh, I know somebody who had a birthmark that looked kind of like that.
So this seems like that explanation of that connection thing, that comet
there isn't
birthmark, seems to me like along the same lines of you wanting me to look over in The Dark Knight Rises, you know, trying to explain how, you know, things connected, how people got from one location to another so quickly, you know? So, and whereas you said to me, you don't need to explain that, you know, it can be clearly explained away, you know, without it being spelled out in the movie.
Yeah.
But you feel that this needs to be spelled out
yes,
in Cloud Atlas?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, and
why?
It's not. Because if you have this thing about interconnected lives and how people, you know, influence each other, there should be at least some sort of confluence with the birthmarks, and there isn't any.
Well,
there's never any point where two people with matching birthmarks see each other and go, holy crap. You know what I mean? There's never any of those moments.
But no, because there's only one person in each storyline that has the birthmark, and it's the soul that you follow throughout the whole timeline.
No, there is time where two people, like in the elevator with Halle Berry, that guy...
No, Sixth doesn't have one. It's Forbisher that has one.
As far as two people having the exact same one, say, hey, I have the exact same birthmark.
Yep.
No, but there is a connecting point where someone has seen it on someone else.
Yeah,
he sees it again on another
right.
person.
Yeah, he sees it on Louisa Reyes when he sees it on Forbisher earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still none of that. There's none of that confluence that shows that this is important. It's
but,
not important.
But
it's
it is
throwaway.
Important because that signifies whose soul is in that body. You know, because it's essentially the movie's about the soul from transferring from one person to another.
It's not, because there's no transference.
Well, no, they don't show the transference, but obviously that's who the soul belongs to, you know?
That doesn't fly with it.
Why not?
Because if that's the case, then why is Tom Hanks playing Timothy Cavendish as an actor when he has no influence on any of the other characters.
In the 2012 time period,
yeah,
he plays the. That's because
he
he's
plays,
just a,
he's just
he,
an
he's
actor
an actor
playing
in that
somebody else.
movie. But the person who would have the tattoo is Jim Broadbent.
Yeah, so he's playing another character. But
he's playing a fictional character. He's playing a fictional character in that storyline.
Well, no, he was playing a person that actually lived. It's an adaptation
at that
of
same
life.
Exact timeline. So he's not the central figure of that timeline. It's the Jim Broadbent character.
It would have made more sense if they had Jim Broadbent playing that role.
Well, it doesn't make any sense
because
he's a screenwriter.
There's no crossover.
It's the same timeline.
It's not because you have someone reading. You have somebody in 20 in what 20. Whatever the future
the
future.
Sanmi is
Sanmi
viewing
is,
that.
Is viewing it.
Yeah.
And. She's watching a movie that just only plays that one clip. I'm not going to be subjected to
right.
These
so that's the
actions.
Influence that the Jim Broadbent character has on her.
See, I don't see that.
I mean, it's quite obvious she's viewing
a movie of someone who doesn't who's of someone playing someone who no longer exists, and that doesn't fly with me.
Romano,
I had no trouble following the movie. I think you guys are getting hung up on the whole soul transferal thing. I mean, I took it a lot like. Like how people's actions in one era led other people in different, you know, in futures to come, like to also do actions that also influence someone else, and you saw like the whole throughout the entire movie, like the guy writes that book about all his journeys, and then that other guy's you know, he gets like motivated to write this beautiful music, and then the music influences. Halle Berry, and as well as the letters, which also influences Sixsmith to trust Halle Berry because he doesn't know who else he can trust with all these letters and paperwork and all this dirt that he has on the company that he's working for. And then the only one I still to this can't really connect is the Halle Berry to the Jim Broadbent.
Right.
I don't know what the connection is there.
Correct.
I would have to see it again, but I mean,
the only connection is that she writes the Half Lives of Lucy Ray and sends it in as a script as a screenplay, which he reads on a train. Which makes him think of someone
okay,
so random.
There you go. That could be the connecting tissue
See,
for that one.
Yeah, to me, that's nonsense. They should have actual interaction.
So you want everybody to interact with one another?
If you're gonna have a confluence of souls, and the souls have to cross.
Why do they have to physically interact? Why can't somebody just be motivated by these letters that somebody wrote, or the music that somebody wrote, or the movie that somebody wrote?
Because the letters are just like the birthmarks, they're another MacGuffin. The letters aren't important.
Yes, they are.
They're not.
Because they're very important to the next storyline.
They're not.
Yes, they are. That's what influences him to write the sonnet.
Though there's no sonnet written. It's a sextet.
Whatever. What?
But that's written before those letters. That's written during the time those letters are written. They're not. The letters
no,
do not.
No, they're written after the letters.
No,
the guy's
Nigel,
fucking dead.
Nigel is writing to Sixsmith as he's writing the Cloud Atlas sextet.
Oh, I'm sorry. The diary. He's reading the diary of that guy. That diary that guy wrote
yes.
influenced him. So,
no,
to write
the musician
the
influences him. Jim Broadbent. It's because he even says it specifically that. This is not mine. This is not yours. This is ours.
No, the whole
this
movie
would not
is
have
about
been
the
possible.
Actions that people do
it's
influence.
Not.
The, yes,
that
it is.
Scene is not because he specifically said he even calls it out. While they're both playing the piano before he hits on him, he says, "I offer you this would not have been possible if I had not met you."
Wait, who says that again?
Frobisher says that to Vivian Ayres while they're playing the piano. Then after
yeah.
he tries to kiss him, and he starts that's when he gets insulted and he goes to leave. He says it right before he tries to kiss him, that this would not have been possible had I not met you.
Well,
he's lying
He's lying during that whole time that he's with Jim Broadbent and Halle Berry in that time period because he's lying about his whole, who he is, you know? So that was a lie. He was actually influenced by the diary.
See, I didn't see that. I see him being influenced by working with a great composer. And that's what inspired him to write the Cloud
Atlas.
No, but
deep down, I don't think he really feels that he's a great composer anymore because even at that point where... he does come up with that original music, and Jim Broadbent's character tries to take credit for it.
Tries to steal it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean he's already like this guy can't write anymore. He even references it at one point. He's like this guy he can't play anymore. He calls him out on it. Like he's fully aware once he meets him. This isn't the guy that I thought I was going to meet. This guy isn't the person he used to be when he was younger.
Yeah.
He's not that person anymore. He needs me more than I need him.
That's right.
And Jim Broadbent kind of like I had this. You know, this music in my dream, and he plays his own thing, and he's like, that's it, and You know what I mean? Like, I think deep down he knows that, you know, he doesn't need Jim Broadbent's character. He can do this on his own.
Yeah, but he's not inspired. He's still not. He's only reading the. He's reading the book as a pastime while he's writing.
But that's what's truly
because
inspiring him. That's what's truly stirring up those emotions.
I never got that because he
writes the Frobisher and he's like a half finished book is like a half finished love affair. Like,
yeah,
it's
like,
kind of like it's just like a parallel between, you know, he's totally inspired by this book, but he wants to continue on
to finish.
And also
the book.
This same thing with his relationship. He wants to continue on with Six and his book.
I didn't
can't.
Get it. Nope.
I really enjoyed the movie quite a bit. I mean, I definitely want to see it again. I'm sure there'll be like I missed that connecting storyline with Jim Broadbent and Halle Berry's character, and you just pointed it out, and it kind of makes sense. I totally didn't pick up on that, but I'm sure I missed a lot more. I don't know, man. It's not for everybody. I definitely.
Oh, it's certainly not for me.
Yeah. yeah, and that's totally fine. I mean, I think it's. I was telling Tim before you got here, like I'm so glad that movies like that exist because. I mean, otherwise we'd just have a ton of like fucking battleships.
That's true. Battleship was a disappointment, but I actually really had really hoped a lot for this movie, and I just sat there just going, train wreck. This is a train wreck, and I need to get off this train.
Wow, it's totally fine. That's
and then true. Like my other big problem too was just the anything having to do with Sami was just like nails on a blackboard with the whole. First, second, and third catechism, and the freedom speech, and all that. Ah, fuck this,
dude. Before you, I had listened to the once Tim edited your thoughts in. I would have bet my life that would have been your favorite storyline.
It wasn't the only one that still really held my interest was the Louisa Ray's one. The only one that seemed like a
that would have been one of my last choices.
Like
last choices
thought
was the
me.
One you would have liked the most.
So I'm gonna go.
You still stick with your C average?
I'm gonna revise it down to a D.
A D.
Yep.
Wow.
Just because the second time around, I just sat there, just like, no.
So a D, a B, and an A minus is gonna be a C plus.
Something like that.
Yeah, I can't fail the movie outright, because it's not a failure.
It's well made.
It's got a bunch of good points to it. It completely miss on all cylinders on me.
That's a shame.
I forgot to mention last time too, just real quick. When we were talking about it, did you have any kind of applause or anything at the end of the movie?
A what?
Applause.
Applause. No.
No. In my theater.
No, because we're together.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I thought you guys watched together. In my theater, at least 5 people clapped.
Huh.
And I was one of them.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wow.
So sorry, first time watchers, listeners. I mean to drop bombs all over this movie, but
that's how you feel.
That's my opinion.
So you gave your grade of a D, which is also an A?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you have to mention?
That's all I got. That's all I've had time for
this
week.
I think that's enough out of you right now. Okay, so I'll go next. I saw a 1949 Japanese movie called Stray Dog. And it's by Akira Kurosawa.
Okay.
And I think I've only seen one other Akira Kurosawa film, and that's Rashomon, which I highly recommend because it's awesome. But Stray Dog, I don't think rises to the same level as Rashomon. It's it's about a rookie homicide detective who's trying to track down his stolen gun that was lifted from him while he was on a train. It's pretty interesting. It's well done. It's well made. But I got to tell you, I think it's a little too long, because it takes place obviously in the sweltering summertime, and it's really comes across very well because everybody's sweating. That's all they do in this movie is sweat. They have handkerchiefs and towels around themselves, just wiping the sweat from there. So you really feel that heat emanating from the screen too. But there's about a 20-minute sequence. It seems like it's at least 20 minutes in the beginning of the movie after his gun is stolen and he's distraught because he's brought shame upon his precinct by losing this gun, you know? And he's just so worried that it's going to be used for a crime. And eventually it does get used for a crime, and they try to track it down after that. And of course, 1949, it's all old school detective work, asking the local hoodlums and you know, the prostitutes and the gun dealers and stuff like that. And there's like a 20-minute sequence in which he like dresses like a local or a wanderer and is just walking around the city, you know, trying to, you know, get in crowds and stuff like that and look around. And I swear to God, it goes on for like 20 minutes. It's a long time. And I'm like, where is this going? What does this even mean, you know? But after that, it really gets interesting, and it's pretty well made. Seeing the culture, of post-war Japan, and see how all the detectives interact with one another, and how they interact with the criminals, and try to uncover this the person who actually has it. And the ending, I gotta say, is very climactic, and it's also awesome because there's like no music at the ending. So for a movie that has music almost throughout the whole thing, it's quite powerful. So I'd have to give it a yay. It's a well-made movie. The next one I'll talk about is The Thing from 2011.
Okay, the prequel.
Huh?
The prequel.
Yes, it was a prequel, and. Have you either of you seen this?
I've not seen it yet.
I have.
I gotta say, I kind of liked it.
It wasn't bad.
I thought it was a really adequately well made, and how they tie in everything to the 1982 John Carpenter thing. They did a good job of explaining a lot of the stuff, because in the 1982 version, they go to the Norwegian station and they see the shit went down.
Yeah.
And how they tied everything in. Pretty well done, and it seems like, you know, I did read up on it, and they did use a mix of digital and practical effects,
yep.
And I think you can tell when the digital effects are placed. There's actually one sequence in a helicopter where somebody's face splits open. That was the worst digital effects right there. That was terrible. Everything else was pretty well done. You really got a sense of I think you got a... you saw the practical effects come out really well. But the storyline, you know, it's kind of the same, follows the same plot beats as the original. But there's some pretty grotesque stuff in this. And, Hermano?
I liked it as well. I remember watching it on HBO, and I wasn't sure what to expect, because I do like the original so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd actually rewatched it not too long before seeing the new one. And, it's one of those movies where I liked it, but I still highly like the first one a lot more.
Oh, sure.
The first one with the practical effects, it's that whole like this charm thing, and I think they did a better job of building the suspense, especially in that scene in the original where Kurt Russell and I think one of the other characters ties a bunch of the guys up, and they're going to do that blood test to everyone. Like, there wasn't a scene, I think, that compared to that one.
I don't know. There was a scene that was almost exactly the same as that. They're not tied up.
No, I'm just thinking suspense-wise. Like, I just didn't feel it as much as I did the original. I remember watching it. And plus, mm-hmm. the thing is like, I watched the original when I was younger.
Yeah.
So I was much more susceptible,
sure.
you know, to a movie like that, where now I'm like, I'm a little more jaded. I'm a little more like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that scene that you're talking about, I thought that was really well done, because they had to find another way of trying to find out who was the... You know, the thing, if you will. And I'm not going to spoil it, but as to what they try to, what they use to try to figure it out, but I think it's pretty ingenious. Since they have to resort to something else, since they don't have the technology that they had that they were able to use in the first movie.
Yeah.
So I actually have to give it a yay. You know, it's a pretty good movie, especially considering that. You know, they're just glomming onto the first one. I totally did not expect it to be this good. And finally, I saw Flight by Robert Zemeckis and starring Denzel Washington. And this movie is pretty good. I think it's in my top 10 of the year so far. And it's pretty powerful. Not exactly what you expect. I know you were interested in this.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm still going to try to see it. Maybe I'll try to see it this weekend if I can.
Yeah, it's not exactly what I expected, because this is a great case of the trailers showing you something a little bit different and a little bit less of what's actually in the movie, because it's more of a character study dealing with addiction than it is about maybe what the trailer would lead you to believe.
A crash investigation.
Yeah, there's a good amount of that in there, but it's really centered around Denzel Washington. And you know, they show in the trailer, you know, John Goodman walking by, and he's only in this movie for like two or three scenes, and he's really funny in this, but it's pretty interesting because the whole, almost all the movie is, you know, a straight-laced drama and character study, like I said. But the moments that that John Goodman pops on screen, you know, it's like for comedic effect. And there's a kind of a point later on in the movie that he pops up, and it changes the tone of the movie. And I'm like, wait a minute, where is this going? And what, when you see it, you'll know what I mean about my concern about while I was watching it. I was like, are they really going with this? Because this is a really strange turn to make. But they kind of turn it around again, and I was happy with it. So it features really, like I said, really strong performances. And I would expect Denzel to get an Oscar nomination for this role. It's pretty good. Although it does get a little manipulative at the end, it's kind of drives home the point a little too much. Even so, it didn't ruin the movie for me. I'll give it a yay.
All right.
Romano.
All right. First one. I got in one last Halloween movie, and I was able to watch a documentary called The American Scream. American Scream centers around three guys.
Not too far away from here.
No, just one town over in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. Centers around three guys who build their own haunted houses in their backyards.
It's a documentary.
It's actually, I guess they call them home haunts.
Okay.
Have you guys heard of these?
No.
Basically, it just follows the three guys, and they all have varying levels of skill and creativity. So the first guy that you're introduced to, he's been doing it for a couple of years now, and you can obviously tell that he has some kind of like sculpting. He makes his own like sculptures and like just like makeup and effects and stuff like that. And his house looks pretty fancy, and he gets like, you know, 1,000 people in like one night just to go to his backyard and walk through his haunted house. And then you're introduced to another guy who's who does it more for fun, and he kind of goes all out as well, but he's not as serious as the first guy. So you get that sense of a guy who's really serious and takes it really personally if like things don't come out just right. Excuse me. And you get this other guy who just kind of does it for fun, and then the third group is kind of like a father and son team. And Mia actually knows the guy, and she, unbeknownst to her, we watched this together, and she didn't know that this guy was in it that she knew. And the way she knew him is she used to work at Blockbuster, and he used to be one of the customers. That's pretty much her whole connection to him. But she was just kind of like, oh, and just smacks me. He's like, I know that guy. And I was like, what? And basically, with their story, it's kind of like whole, like, it's more like a father bonding type, father son bonding thing. And they definitely have the least like skill as far as putting it in. So, I mean, there's a good, variety there as far as that. You get to see kind of like what, like maybe someone just starting out might, you know, might make their haunted house look like. And then somebody that really puts a lot of time and has been doing it for years, you know, can put out. And you get a little more into their lives and their stories. And, you know, I highly recommended it. I thought it was a really well done documentary. And it looks flawless. Like, it looked really good. Like,
do you know who made it?
No.
Same guy that directed Troll 2. I'm sorry, not Troll 2. best worst movie.
I was about to fucking blow a load. I was like, no way.
But
he's come
of course
so far.
He was in Troll 2, of course.
Yeah, he was in Troll 2. But yeah. I mean, we saw best worst movie. And
have you seen that yet?
Troll 2?
Yeah, no, best worst movie.
Not yet.
The documentary about Troll 2. It's really good and it's fun. And this is not as fun as that, but it's really well done. And you know, I'd say yay on it.
That's cool.
And then
your mystery movie of the week.
My mystery movie of the week. I've been knocking a lot of my you know, list of shame off.
Before we get to that, I have to congratulate you last week on knocking off on your total top list of shame. Citizen Kane.
Yeah, son.
I know. Weren't you proud to hear that?
I was like, yeah. Damn, I wish I was there.
Exactly.
Wow, man, make it seem so monumental.
It is.
But
anyways, this week.
I don't know that this one's held in as high regard as Citizen Kane, but for me, I saw a movie recently by this director, and I'm kind of going back and watching all these movies I missed by all these, these well-known directors and, well-regarded directors. So I picked up another David Lynch film, and I watched Blue Velvet.
Oh, shit.
Have either of you guys seen it?
I'm surprised you've never seen that.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Okay, so this movie...
it's pretty fucked up.
It's pretty much... in a sense. But basically, it revolves around a guy returning home from school to look after or to visit his sick father. And they live in a small town. It's one of these small towns. I think... I can't even tell when the movie takes place, but I'm going to assume it's somewhere like in maybe the 60s or the 70s. Just based on the cars everyone was driving in the clothing.
The 70s.
Maybe 50s, 60s, 70s,
yeah,
something like that. I couldn't quite tell. But basically, it's like a small, sleepy town. And, he's walking through the town one day in this back field. And he finds a severed human ear. And he brings it to the police. He's obviously concerned. And the main character is actually Kyle MacLachlan. A few days pass, and the police, don't have any leads. So he starts to conduct his own investigation with the help of the police chief's daughter, and it leads them into some strange circumstances. But I won't spoil the movie. But I will say that the standouts in this movie for me by far were Isabella Rossellini and Dennis Hopper.
Yeah,
Dennis Hopper's first appearance in this movie.
Baby wants to fuck Blue Velvet.
Is fucking so memorable. I've been thinking, it still can't shake it out of my head. His first appearance in this movie is mind-blowing.
Terrifying, isn't it?
It's really quite creepy. And his character on a whole is insane in this movie. Like, he was so good. And so many quotable lines from this movie that, I've been reciting and I've been going back and forth with me and just saying things that he said in the movie. And the movie's awesome. I mean, I honestly, I know that Mulholland Drive is, I think, one of his most highly regarded movies.
I think this is right up there.
I would say I think I like this a little bit better. Though I think it's one of those situations where I like this better, but I recognize that I think Mulholland Drive is probably overall a better movie. But I highly recommend this if you haven't seen it. It's right up there with movies that I'm literally ashamed that I have not seen. Right up there with, Badlands, and Citizen Kane. But I'm glad I saw it now. Blue Velvet, definitely a yay.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
All right. So, in lieu of trailer hitches this week, there was some big news in the entertainment industry that recently took place. And as some of you may have heard, Disney just bought the Star Wars property from George Lucas for a little over $4 billion. Wally, where were you when you heard this news?
Just...
I figured this is one of those big events that you'd be like, yeah. Oh my god, where was I when I heard this?
Well, let's see, where the hell was I? I think I was at work. I was still at work, actually.
Yeah,
I was actually working the night shift at the newspaper.
Yeah, I was just leaving work, and before I leave work, I always check my widgets on my computer to the BBC News, and the very top was Disney buys. I mean, like holy shit, and nobody was around for me to even talk to. I'm like, God damn it.
See, it's fun. That's one of those times I wish we could have a special guest on the show, like Lee.
Yeah.
Who I would love to hear what he had to say.
That's true. Romano?
Oh, man, that's actually a good point. I haven't even... I see him... Well, I don't see him every day, but I mean, you work with him every day, and I haven't even gone up to him and talked to him about it or anything. But I was home, and Mia was here, and I remember just flipping through my phone, and I saw it, and I was... It was like a Fox News headline or something, and I'm like, Disney buys Star Wars for $4.05 billion or something. And I'm like, no way. Like, Fox fell for it. Like, they're reading some, online, hoax or something on Twitter or some shit. And, I was, at the time, they were the only ones that had posted it. I couldn't find it anywhere else on the internet other than the Fox News thing. And slowly but surely, I checked, maybe 15 minutes later, and it exploded. It was everywhere. And I was just here at home, and I was, I just mentioned it to me, and I'm like, can you believe that? Like, my mind was blown. I'm like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah, that's exactly what the thing is. Didn't you all think that Lucas was going to take this to his grave?
I thought maybe that might have happened because of the way he likes to keep fiddling and fiddling and fiddling with it.
I would never have expected him to sell the property.
Well, I think there has to be some sort of the catalyst. So he basically came out and made a statement that he wants to really promote like education. Like he wants to use his money.
He's donating most of it to education.
So, like education, especially the arts.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty freaking cool, actually.
That's noble.
But I don't know if you've seen the pictures of like the contract signing. Every single picture of George Lucas has like this like. I can't even see people are only getting the audio. He has this such a cross between like stone faced and like sadness. Well, he's at the table with the contracts and all that. If you look it up, you can find probably a bunch of pictures of it. There's very few of them actually smiling.
So, what do you guys think overall about this news?
I know a number of people that I know that are Star Wars fans are all like, "Oh my God, it's the end of this." It's the end of the franchise, as we know, blah, 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 blah.
Didn't that already exist?
Yeah, so I had to ask him, I go, did you not like Clerks? Yeah. Did you not like Reservoir Dogs? Yeah. Did you not like Kill Bill 1 and 2? Yeah. Have you not heard of Kids? All released by Disney.
On Miramax.
Through Miramax. Doesn't matter. They're still owned by Disney. And then you've got other movies like, I had a list of them. It's escaping me. Go.
Well, pretty much anything on Miramax. Like, I mean, I think Pulp Fiction was also released on Miramax. Yep. And I mean,
now you have the Marvel movies. Did you not like The Avengers?
Yeah,
did you not like Iron Man?
They came late. They didn't even own Marvel at the time. Iron Man was out, I don't think.
Yeah,
I think they came around Captain
about
America.
About halfway
maybe.
Through, right.
Yeah, so.
They did, but you have The Avengers, owned by Disney.
Exactly. So I think that's the key right there, is if they put somebody, a Joss Whedon-like person.
Oh, I would love to see what he would do with that.
I said like person, not him, because he's busy. And I wouldn't want him to do it, because I want him to focus on what he's doing right now, which is good, you know? But if they had someone like him that had the same respect for the property, you know, then I think that would be really, really good. So, Hermano, what is your reaction? What do you think about the future and whatnot?
I gotta be honest, that first one I heard, I was like, I don't know if this is a good thing. Like, I think I had a lot of emotions going through me, because I do love the original three for the most part, and I don't like the Phantom Menace at all, except for the final fight scene. And you know, I like this certain scenes of the second one, certain scenes of the the third episode. But I just wasn't sure how Disney's going to handle it, and no one can predict for sure like what they're going to do. I just hope that they keep the spirit of the original three, episodes 4, 5, and 6, and somehow duplicate that going forward with 7, 8, 9.
I think it'd be pretty hard to duplicate that, but what about as far as characters? Because, I mean, I find it difficult for audiences, new and old, I think even new audiences, to accept recasting the characters.
I don't think you'd see that. I don't think Disney will go back and do that.
Right, I agree with you.
Yeah, that'd be a huge
What
mistake.
They would do is they probably take a lot of novelizations that have been written by some pretty prolific writers, and you'd see things like the Chiss and the Yuuzhan Vong. And you know all the other characters that come along.
That's what I'm saying. Is new characters. You'd have to introduce.
I think this expands the universe to more than just Tatooine.
Yeah. Well,
and Coruscant.
And Hoth.
Tatooine, Coruscant, Hoth, and the lava planet that you know Anakin lost all his shit on.
I would like them to somehow include though, like if there is like storylines where Luke is still alive in the timeline. Like I would like to see like an older Luke, maybe with some, heading up a Jedi Academy or. Carrie Fisher and Han Solo are married. Princess Leia and Han Solo are married. And
well, that'd be cool to see, and especially have to think of like use, you know, Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, and Mark Hamill now.
Yeah,
and Mark Hamill,
they're all still around,
yeah.
So it's like why
it's a little
not?
Worse
like,
for the wear, but
obviously you can't don't do like a Tron and Jeff Bridges where they made him look young.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like don't do that at all. Don't recast, you know, another Luke Skywalker. You know what I mean? Like I don't want to see that. I just want to see them pay homage to those characters. And not sully them in any way, because they're like deep rooted in a lot of people's memories. You don't want to see like all of a sudden Zac Efron playing Mark, Luke Skywalker, because that would it would literally destroy Star Wars for me, and I could never watch another thing. Like or like Justin Bieber somehow in the Star
Chewbacca.
Wars, I would fucking explode. Like I would just be like, dude, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I don't even know what to do right now. Like I'm just gonna go crazy. Like I just don't want to see anything like that. Just. Don't fuck this up is all I ask Disney. Do not fuck this up.
Yeah, I agree. And you would think that they would have the foresight, especially with how they've handled the Marvel franchise. You know, by just, I'm assuming that they've for the most part, stayed out of the of Joss Whedon's hair. I'm sure there have been somebody at one point saying, "Hey, we need to include this or that, you know." But overall, for the majority, I have a feeling that they let him go, you know, and have a bit of creative freedom. So if they did that with somebody, you know, and they do have the, you know, Kathleen Kennedy, who's been, you know, with Lucasfilm for a long time, and I think Amblin as well. They do have her on board as a producer. So, you know, hopefully that they will stay true to this, you know, and like you said, stay true to the original trilogy. And I think it's possible to move forward and kind of somewhat ignore the prequels. Because I don't think there's anything to stay, you know, to take from the prequels. If you're moving forward, you're moving from episode 6.
Yeah,
you know?
That storyline is pretty much closed. I mean,
exactly.
If you continue on, the characters are still around, but that whole Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader stuff is done.
Yeah, the Skywalker
family
is done.
But yeah, like just I mean, even more so than Marvel, I think Star Wars has way more diehard fans. I mean, in my opinion, and
oh yeah.
They're going to catch so much shit if they fuck this up.
Well,
it's
you know,
Jaden Smith is Mace Windu growing up.
you know, that's a thing that somebody is going to be unhappy. There will be always
there's always
going to
be somebody who's
unhappy.
Yeah, you can't please everybody.
So, I do not envy the person who's going to take on this task, you know, because it's not going to be an easy job. Fielding all this crap from the geek media,
No one ever is ever going to have as much weight on their shoulders as whoever has to take on episode 7.
You thought Joss Whedon was having a big deal when the Avengers, it's 100 times that it's going to be this next movie. And 2015, I mean, that's 2 years
so
from years now.
Away.
You know.
So they might have to get like a director attached relatively soon, because I mean it's probably going to take about 2 years to get this movie made.
I guess, you know, you have to find a good, you know, you have to write it first of all, you know.
Yeah.
And then you have to, yeah. So it's like I said, I do not envy the person who's going to undertake this, but you know, I'm sure we're all just hopeful, right?
I have faith.
Well, you do.
Yes, and I find your lack of faith disturbing. I wholeheartedly have faith in this. I don't think they're going to screw it up.
Yeah, and I'm just glad we're going to get some more Star Wars movies.
You're glad, really?
Yeah, because I mean, I thought it was done. That's it. Like, after the last three that came out, I thought George Lucas was just going to be like, done.
Huh.
No more, ever. He caught so much shit for the last three. I thought he was absolutely done. He's retiring. He was talking about retiring before this, and I just thought, no more Star Wars movies ever. That sucks.
I wouldn't be surprised too if you see a release of the original Star Wars on Blu-ray as a set from Disney, because they might actually listen to the fans and be like, here's what you want.
That's the thing. There's some sort of distributing rights that Fox still owns and whatnot that I think it's going to be tough. I think I heard like 2020 they wouldn't be able to have the rights for that.
That's just for Empire and Return of the Jedi.
Oh, that's right.
As far
Star
as
Wars,
A New Hope, they hold it forever.
Fox does. Yeah, forever.
So Disney's gonna have to pay up like lots of money.
Now this is interesting, Wally, because knowing you for a relatively a long time, you used to be quite critical of Disney, and now you have faith in them
because they've changed leadership.
Uh-huh.
Will Eisner had to go. Will Eisner? I got the right name? I think I'm the comic guy.
Eisner
had to go.
Yeah.
He was ruining that company. Now that he's gone, they have people who actually, you know, make good stuff, you know, in there, and they bought Pixar, and they did all this, you know, they've done a lot of good with it, and I can't fault Disney for anything that they've made so far. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I have nothing. They gave me the new Tron, and I love the new Tron, you know, and Tron was something that was near and dear to my heart as a kid, and I watched, you know, the new one when it came out in 3D, and I was like, this is what I hoped for.
What?
No, just when he said I love the new Tron, I was like, what about the proton and the electron?
Oh!
Well played. Was there anything else you guys wanted to mention about the Star Wars news?
I have faith. I think that Disney's not going to screw up. I think they've got deep enough pockets to make it work. They can get the right directors. They obviously have they can do the effects. And they'll be able to do something for both the adults and the kids. So there'll be a nice mesh. You'll probably even see a Star Wars
now,
animated series.
Now, you know, it's funny you say that because I'm kind of looking into the future with the Marvel Universe, and you know how they have all these movies in line, you know, just one after the other. And I'm wondering if there's going to be public fatigue with the Marvel franchise. And I wonder if the same thing's going to happen with the Star Wars franchise, because if they plan a movie every 2 to 3 years, along with the cartoons, along with a TV series, you know, like Marvel's doing as well, I mean, don't you think there's going to be fatigue setting in?
I think that they run the risk of that, but Disney's... I think Disney's...
Because this is
enough.
Unprecedented.
Yeah.
There's really never anything that's been done like this before.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the Marvel Universe, and if they're going to try to follow the same model with the Star Wars universe now?
Well, you might actually see an alternating. You might see an alternating thing. So you might see no movie for a year. Then year two would be Star Wars. Year three would be Marvel. Then another period of no movie. Then Star Wars. I mean, you might see it in a pattern like that.
I don't know if Disney would do that. Let a year go without any money.
Well, no,
they'll have other releases.
They probably have the TV series or whatever. But they probably would staccato it so that they could, you know, prevent something like fatigue. They wouldn't have it like, you know. Oh boy, look, we have another Star Wars and another Marvel movie to go see. Oh, look, another Star Wars and another... I don't think they'd do that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think they put in a lot of eggs in one basket. Like, they own some of the biggest franchises now, and now they potentially got to put out a movie from each of these franchises every year. That's like a ton of money. Like, they got to put out some kind of Marvel movie, a Star Wars movie, potentially a Pixar movie.
I mean, they gross $35 billion a year anyway, so...
Yeah, true, but I mean, I don't know, man. It's just... I just wonder if, like, quality's gonna suffer for one if, you know, they're putting so much effort in another, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm one of those, I'm gonna wait and see. Like, I'm not gonna totally just, you know, knock them and just be like, oh, they're not gonna do it right, they suck, whatever. I'll wait and see.
I'm not talking about the quality. I'm really talking about the public sentiment. You know, is the public really going to be invested in, like, oh, another one? You know, I mean, there's been a lot, you know?
Well, things move in cycles. Even superhero movies, like, what, like 10 years ago, before, like, Iron Man came out, like, they were kind of dead.
Spider-Man came out in 2001.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, like, Spider-Man probably came out, but, like before Spider-Man, what was...
There was nothing in the 90s.
The quality was really bad, and, like, you know, then... One after the other, good ones started coming out.
You know that Captain America movie came out in 1990? Isn't that terrible?
That's terrible.
I mean, it looks like 1975, doesn't it? Anyways,
Well, all right, when did Revenge of the Sith come out?
2005.
All right, so between 2005 and 2012, that's a span of, what, seven
years?
I still see little
kids...
Well,
2015, so it'll be 10 years.
I still see little kids every Halloween as stormtroopers. I still see Darth Vaders. I still see Yodas. As long as you have children that are going to see those movies and have parents that are going to be like...
It's also because of the cartoons.
Yeah, you're going to see... I think they'll be all right with the Star Wars as far as...
If the quality is there, it's not going to matter if they put a movie out every 2 years.
Yeah.
If they're always good, then what's it going to matter? Like, if they're good, they're good. If they start dipping in quality, then yeah, of course people are going to, like, start talking shit.
Yep, that's a good point. Anything else? We ready to move on?
Ready to move on.
I'm ready to move on.
All right, let's talk about Wreck-It Ralph. The plot... A video game villain wants to be a hero and set out to fulfill his dream, but his quest brings havoc to the whole arcade where he lives. The director, Rich Moore. The voice actors, John C. Reilly, Sarah Silverman, Jack McBrayer, Jane Lynch, Adam Carolla, Alan Tudyk, and many more. Walter,
yo.
I'm starting with you again. There were quite a few old school video game references in this movie. But were you able to look beyond this nostalgia and find a worthy film? Did all of the vintage charm mask an otherwise mediocre effort?
I hate this film. I fucking hate this movie.
I don't agree with you.
I sat there and I was like, I needed a belt.
I think you're having flashbacks of Cloud Atlas.
I am having flashbacks of Cloud Atlas. No, I really like this movie. It's a basic movie. It's made for kids and, you know, their parents that are going to bring them to come see the movie. And this is one of those movies that I liked it as a movie. It's a pretty straightforward storyline. I knew exactly where all the plot beats were going to happen. You know, it's an hour and a half long. I knew exactly, okay, we're going to do this at, you know, the 30-minute mark and then the 60-minute mark, and then this is going to be the wrap-up at the 90-minute mark. You know, this is how it's all going to get wrapped up at the end. But this is one of those movies that normally I don't like going to see a movie when there's a bunch of little kids in the theater. But these kids in our theater, when we went to go see it, made the movie even cooler for me.
The
little girl behind us, she was laughing at all the
She was repeating everything the Sarah Silverman
character
said.
She was having like a little like parrot behind me.
Yeah.
But like the little kids in the audience were the best kids ever. They were quiet through the movie. They laughed at all the right parts. And that kind of, like, when you have like, get to see a movie with a crowd, it's a lot more fun. And they have, having a crowd full of little children around made it even more fun. Like, this is great. Like, this is a hit. This is a hit on Disney's hands right here, because these kids are just absolutely eating this up with a spoon, even though they probably have never seen Q-Bert. They've never seen
Sonic.
They've never seen Tapper. They've never seen Burger Time. They've never seen Street Fighter. You know what I mean? But and yet they were completely like all in on this movie. So I think this movie is, you know, it's story wise, it's run of the mill. You know what I mean? You have a guy wants to change. He's a villain. He wants to be a good guy, and he's got to go through this. He's got to go through his little character arc of doing something good. You know, to save, and then has to save the day. You know, at one point he's going to revert back to being a villain again. And that's exactly what happens. He goes forward, takes a step back, and then he runs to the finish line.
Spoiler alert.
It's a kid's movie.
Hermano.
Hello.
Hi.
I was not as fond of this movie as Wally was. I don't think it's total trash. But I think part of the problem for me is that I had a different idea of what this movie was going to be. I thought this movie was going to be more of just like an homage to classic video games, and it was going to be full of references, and like I was just going to be like, oh, I remember that, oh, that's so cool, they included that. And it was in the beginning, and the beginning is the only part of the movie that I really enjoyed. Once they got to Sugar Rush, I think was the name of the game, and they pretty much stayed there for two-thirds of the movie, I lost total interest, because at that point it became too much of a kids movie for me. Like, it was the equivalent of watching like a Nickelodeon cartoon, where it was just as predictable as like a short episode of a Nickelodeon cartoon. Like, I knew everywhere this movie was gonna go. It was the most like blah like plot line in a kids movie. It was the same thing I've seen over and over and over in a kids movie. It's like rinse and repeat. We have a bad guy who wants to be good. He meets another character. The character is having an issue. At some point, Ralph is going to do something which betrays the other character's trust. Then he wins the character back. Then everyone just lives happily ever after. And it's like, wow, how many effing times have I seen this? And even the little twist that comes, like I saw that coming from a mile away. And I was like, when's this guy going to come back into the fold? And of course he did in a big way. And I'm like, by that point, it was too late. Like, there was a few more video game references sprinkled in towards the middle, like the whole the code.
Road Blasters.
What was that?
Road Blasters.
What's that?
The video game Road Blasters.
I don't remember Road Blasters. Anyway, no, I was talking about the code, which was the Contra code, the up, up, down,
yeah,
down,
yeah,
down,
yeah,
down,
yeah.
Up, right? Like, I thought that was hilarious. I laughed at that. I laughed at when he's looking through the box and he pulls out the little exclamation point and he's like, what's this? It's from Metal Gear. And I was like, oh my god. And then I, and just like the little meeting they were all the bad guys were having, a little not an intervention, what was it? It's just like a little
bad guy anonymous.
Yeah, sort of. And you know, I was picking out little characters like Dr. Robotnik from Sonic was in there. We had Sub-Zero, Kano from Mortal Kombat, M. Bison, Zangief from Street Fighter. Like, I was just like, all that stuff I loved.
What, the graffiti in the train tunnel?
Graffiti in the train
tunnel? Yeah, it says Aerith lives, Leroy Jenkins,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shang Long was here.
Yeah, yeah, it was always, I liked all that stuff, and I thought the movie was going to be more of that. And when it wasn't, I just felt disappointed, but that's probably more my fault than it is of the movie. But I still feel strongly about what I just said. Like, I thought it was way more of a kids movie than I thought it was going to be.
Wow. Well, I kind of disagree more about you about being more of a kids movie. I mean, I think there's plenty of... I think it really follows a lot of the same beats as, like, a Toy Story. I think it's really the Toy Story of the video game franchises. You know how there's a bunch of old toys in the Toy Story movies?
Yeah.
It's the same thing with this movie, you know? And it follows a lot of the same beats, you know? But I still found it very enjoyable. I loved this movie. This movie's in maybe my top five of the year so far. It's fantastic. I think the heart is there. I didn't get bored at all. You said you guys kind of got bored when it was in the Sugar Rush?
I got bored when it was Sugar Rush. I started looking at my hands. I don't even know what I was doing. I was just like, man, this is so... it totally lost me. I loved, actually, when they were in the Heroes Duty. I wish the movie took place in that world, because then I think I would have been a lot more interested. But
that'd be hilarious to see Sarah Silverman's like little girl cat is dodging giant bugs.
I thought this movie was ingenious in the way that it played with the video game characters and the human characters playing the video games, like the hero's duty, how they have the first person. It's a robot. It's a bot acting as a soldier with a video screen for the head. That's ingenious. Working that in, how the girl once again tries to play one of the games and it's not working right. And they have to put it out of order. The fixed Felix.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all the characters are just trying to stay.
Kind of like,
character and not. Yeah. I don't know. I found this
that
movie
was still
ingenious.
Towards the beginning of the movie, and I do like it. But once they got to the sugar rush, is where the movie completely lost me. And even by the end, it just never got me back.
Oh, I loved Sarah Silverman's character. I thought she was so cute, so fantastic, and it was great the way she voice acted it. She never went down the typical like dirty Sarah Silverman that you think that they might have crowbarred in there a couple of times. No, not at all.
Snarky Sarah Silverman.
Right.
Well, she was definitely snarky. I mean, she maybe in a more childish
way,
but
exactly. But I thought it was great. And there was a part in this movie where Ralph and what's her name? Sarah Silverman's character. Vanellope. They team up to create something, and then that item is destroyed. And as that was happening, I was like, man, this so reminds me of something else. I've seen this someplace else. And I'm like, oh! It took me, later that night, I finally figured it out. It was in Little Mermaid, when Ariel's father finds her room full of trinkets and objects, human objects, and he destroys everything, and then finally he sees the statue and he destroys the statue. That's the same exact beat. And once I figured that out, I was like, oh yeah, I've seen that. They've done that before. But like, it was still executed perfectly in this movie.
That's what I was talking about. I've seen that happen, and it's usually in Disney movies.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same story beats. Like, it hits the same plot points, and I'm just like, dude, I know this is going. He's just going to make it up to her. Everything's going to be great.
Sure, of course, it's going to follow the same beats as, but it's still how it's executed. And I thought it was still executed fine.
Well, it's easy to execute it, but when you have nothing new to execute, you're just following the same old basic blueprint of every movie that's come before this. So it's like, how hard would it be to execute that? It's been done a million times. I'm not saying it was done poorly, because there's no way to do it poorly. I mean, I've seen it a million times. Like, it's the same. It's like identical to every movie that I've seen it in before.
I mean?
Like, it didn't surprise me at all. I was like, man, I know it's a kids movie and kids just want familiarity, and they want something that, like, connects and they can recognize, but I don't know. Like,
I was still surprised by the elements that they put in between those same beats, That still entertained me a lot.
I just think that some so-called kids' movies do it a little better, where they balance the kid elements and the adult elements pretty well.
I think the perfect example of that is Toy Story 3.
Toy Story 3 did a pretty good job of it, and I'm not even a huge fan of the Toy Story movies. I think they're some of my least favorite Pixar movies.
Ugh.
I think they did it really well in Up, because there were some really hard elements, especially for a so-called kids movie, in Up, especially the beginning, which most people cry at. And then once you introduce the kid and the old man, there's a lot of, like, kid stuff there. And then once again with the talking dog, and they balance that good. Like and then you get the plot line where the kid is lost, or the kid's dad is not in his life. And you get the more serious stuff, and then, it'll bounce right back to, like, maybe something more comedic. And then by the, like, this movie was just straight, everything's great, I really didn't even buy that, the whole Sarah Silverman character, like, being mad at Ralph or whatever for destroying something. And I was just like, really? That wasn't impactful at all.
That moment that I described briefly before, that wasn't impactful?
No, because it's resolved, like, I swear to God, I feel like it was resolved, like, maybe 5 minutes later.
No.
How, not much more than that.
I bet it was more than 5 or 10 minutes later.
Because it really felt like it was a really quick turnaround. Like, he's just, you know, sulking and thinking, like, did I do the right thing? And then, like, maybe 5 or 10 minutes later, he comes back into the picture and everything's fine.
I think it was a little bit longer than that. Wallet? Anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, there's something that they could have done, like, with this movie that I was kind of hoping that they were going to go, especially with the whole Sugar Rush thing and the villain revelation. It would have been great to see them just tear through, like, a bunch of different games through the hub that everyone hangs out at, like the Grand Central Station.
Yeah,
like
if they built the world a little bit differently, if the rules were laid out a little bit different, I can see how that would have been.
Because that would have been great, to see them, like, when they show up in, like, Jane Lynch's game, like the Hero's Duty, to see them, like, all, like, high res all of a sudden, like, whoa! And then let the chase keep going. Maybe even, like, you can even, like, bring the Tron cycles in there, because that's also Disney property.
How about everybody go through Pac-Man? That would be pretty funny.
Well, they do that.
No, I mean, like, in that chase sequence you were thinking about, you know?
Well, yeah, if they didn't already go through Pac-Man at the therapy, you know, the therapy session.
I know.
But it'd have been great to see them, like, he's getting away, quick, maybe we can use these, and it's like light cycles, like, whoa! And they just take off.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been cool to see. I think that would have, like, really, like, really pushed the movie home for me.
Anything else you guys want to mention before we get into spoilers?
No, I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Just one last thing. Yes. I think this movie kind of sends, like, a weird message. I don't know if this is a spoiler. It might be. Maybe I'll wait. I'll wait, actually, until spoilers.
I think I know where you're going with this, and I have something I actually wanted to add about that, so I'll wait till you mention it.
Okay.
All right, then. Spoilers, then. Romano, what's that spoilery thing talking about?
All right, so the reason that they're in the Sugar Rush game, and the reason that, you know, Sarah Silverman's character, or Vanellope or whatever, even exists in the game, is she's kind of like an outcast, and she's considered a game glitch. So, and the way you could tell that is she keeps, like, glitching in and out of, like, her appearance or whatever. And I feel like by the end of the movie, like where Ralph's whole journey is that, you know, he's a bad guy who wants to be good, and people are just giving him shit for it, and I'm like, I don't get this. Like, what kind of message is it sending to kids? Like, if you're a bad person, you can't change? And with the girl, it was like she was a glitch, and a glitch in a game in real life is like could be potentially a game-breaking thing. And she's, by the end of the movie, she's fine with being a glitch. Like, she's accepted who she is, and a glitch is technically like a cheat. And Ralph, you know, is a bad guy who's not allowed to make a change or be good. So I'm like, what message is it sending to kids? Like, I'm like, is this really like
the
message they're pushing?
Well, no, I don't. I think it's, you're looking at it from the opposite, from the wrong point of view, especially when it comes to Ralph's character. I think that it's about everybody else accepting him. It's not him trying to change. It's about the other people trying to accept him for his faults, essentially. He's a faulty character. He can't help his job. His job is to wreck things. And that's just his nature, you know? So essentially, let's say he's a clumsy person, you know? And everybody else is outcasting him because he's a clumsy person. So therefore, it's not about him changing. He can't change the fact that he's a clumsy person. Everybody else has to change their viewpoint of accepting him for who he is.
I don't know that I got that. I mean, I got it more like,
and that's
that,
what they do at the end.
I felt like especially the point where he goes back after with the medal, and once he's gotten the medal that he's been, you know, after the whole game and the whole movie. I mean, and he goes back, and then that one guy is just in the penthouse, and he's like, "Hey, where's everybody?" And like, "Oh, they're all, you know, they've all moved on or whatever, because, you know, they're going to shut down the game because you left." And he's, like, giving him shit because he wanted to do something good and wanted to, like, be the hero for once. And I'm like, why? I just could not get past that. I'm like, why is this guy giving him so much shit for trying to be a good person, for trying to do the right thing, and for not just not wanting to all his whole life to be about just smashing things? And he's like, oh, man, it's all your fault that everyone's left. He's giving him this big guilt trip. And I'm like, what the fuck kind of message is that? I'm like, am I really seeing this right now?
You're right. It is a bad message at that time. But in the end, those residents of that tower,
the only thing I got out of that is that their tiny little lives don't exist unless Ralph is smashing their building. Like, that's their only purpose. It's like, if without Ralph, they can't exist.
Okay.
And I'm like, all right, as far as a message, like, they kind of like the symbiotic unit, they need each other. Like, that message is fine, but I feel like that message is completely overshadowed by the other thing with, you know, them giving them a guilt trip about trying to be good and going out and, you know, being a hero. In the girl, as far as being a glitch, I'm like, you're going to remain a glitch? Like, I'm like, are you serious? That's like a cheat in a game. Like, anybody that's like maybe a teenager knows that, and it's like a game-breaking thing potentially. And I'm like, I don't get what kind of message that is.
Maybe I can understand your beef with her being a glitch, you know, but even so, I still think it's those girls who were outcasting her, you know,
yeah.
In the beginning. It's, once again, it's their
it's
viewpoint.
About
accepting
it's accepting
her
for who
her.
She is. But I mean,
exactly.
There's even a scene, they go out of the way to show a scene where she's racing, and there's like two people in front of her that are about to win the race, and she just glitches in front of them and wins. And I'm like, really? Did I just see that?
Well,
like, it's,
you know,
a, it's like telling kids it's okay to cheat.
No, it's like her power up. Everybody in the game has a certain power up, you know,
so hers is like
a special ability. No, hers is just, oh, you know, a quick burst, you know, forward.
Like, I don't know. I didn't really get that. I mean, I'm mostly joking. I mean, it's kind of a weird message to send. I mean, I'm sure most of the kids in my theater, I don't know about the ones in yours, but there was like maybe a 5 or 6 year old behind me that was just a complete mess. Like, he's dropping his nachos on the floor. He's like, constantly
talking to his
dad.
We have some really well-behaved kids.
Yeah,
so you mean he was distracting?
He was completely distracting. Like, at times, like, he was nonstop. Like, he dropped his soda at one point. He dropped his nachos. His dad is like getting upset. Like, he's talking about the mobile movie. He's like standing up, changing seats. I'm like, oh my god, man, this is a nightmare. Like, he sat right behind us. But,
so he wasn't into the movie.
He was into it, but it was only specific scenes. I think once he got to he was like me. Once he got to Sugar Rush, he totally lost it. He's like, this looks like a little girl game. Like, and he was just like, nah, I'm not into this.
You wanted to say something to add to that?
Well, yeah. Well, I guess the thing what struck me is the big thing in this movie is that you can't have a hero without a great bad guy. You know what I mean? Like, without Ralph, Felix can't fix anything. And what good is a guy who fixes stuff that there's no one there to break it, and like no one in the penthouse seems to realize this. You know, they're like, oh, we love Felix, completely forgetting that there's another half of the equation. And I've been in Ralph's shoes, actually. I think that's why, one of the reasons why I like this movie so much is that when I used to be a pro wrestler, I was a villain, so I never got to sign autographs or like hang out with the audience. But you're damn well right that when my match came up, I would get that audience to absolutely hate me, so that no matter who came out that door, they would automatically love them by default. And just seeing that, like, in this game, like, you know, like, we're, like Zangief says it, he's like, I crush men's, you know, heads with my legs like they're sparrow's eggs. And then I go, I should be a good guy. But then who would crush men's heads like sparrow's eggs?
Yes, exactly.
But isn't it still kind of a weird message to be like, all right, by the end, they accept him, but they accept him really only as the guy that just breaks stuff and, hey, now we'll just make you a cake and we'll have your little icon on top.
Well, no, they realize he's a good man. But has to have it. But has to be
but
the bad
has
guy.
Has to do the bad things.
But that's just his job, you know. He's not really a bad guy. He's
no.
Just that's just his purpose in the
exactly.
game.
Exactly. Like
know?
Like I
to
go
serve.
Out to the ring and I don't in my real life I don't go around insulting cripples, you know. But you get me in the ring and I have to be that person.
No, I get that, but
you know,
it's the same as like
I'm assholes to sales reps. It's my job. You still like me and accept me.
I don't know. I'm mostly joking. I mean, I still don't agree that this is like one of the better animated movies that I've seen. It's not a Pixar movie, so I think that hurts a little bit for me because I don't feel like
the quality, Cars 2 really. Really
I didn't even
bar,
see
huh?
Cars 2. I skipped it. But I mean, as far as like Up and WALL-E and stuff like that, this movie is not even close.
No,
to
No, I'm not saying that.
And I don't even like the Toy Story series, and I think Toy Story 3 is better than this. Like, I just think Pixar's quality level is just just light years beyond most other animated movies.
Well, yeah,
and to me, this seemed like one of the lesser ones.
That's a shame. Is there anything else you guys want to mention, though?
I still wish I could have seen that a chase from like multi platforms. That would have been great.
Like Scooby-Doo style, where everybody's just coming out of the doors and like
that,
you're like trying
that
to get
would,
each
that
would
have been great too, especially with the hub. We have all those the portals to go to the other games. That
yeah.
would be great to see a chase kind of do like that goofy like different doors thing.
You briefly mentioned the villain, in, you know, in this game.
King Candy!
Well, who was Turbo.
Yep.
In the old game, and he, you know, took over the Sugar Rush game.
Did you guys see that coming, or no?
You know what? I think...
I didn't see that coming.
Honestly, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, well, yeah, that makes sense. I was kind of surprised, but then looking back on it, I was like, yeah, I should have seen that coming. You know?
Yeah, I think it was one of those things I should have seen it coming, but I knew that the king was, like, up to no good.
Right.
You know, with the way he's like, she can't race!
Right.
You know?
I mean, just as far as the introduction of Turbo in, like, a little, like,
flashback.
Like, Turbo-tastic.
Yeah, and I was like, all right, so they're introducing this character, and I'm like, as I was thinking, I was like, there's really no bad guy in this movie yet. I mean, maybe the bug, but I was like, the bug's, like, totally, like, there's no voice,
it's
there's no personality to him, and I'm like, he can't be the final guy, like, there's no way. And I'm like, every Disney movie has, like, an ultimate bad guy, and I'm like, it's got to be that guy. He must have gotten out before they unplugged his game somehow, and I'm like, he's going to come back in some form, and I didn't know quite how. I'm not going to say that I completely saw that he was King Candy in disguise, but I knew he was going to come back in some capacity, and, you know, inevitably he does. And I mean, I don't know. That wasn't, like, the, you know, the bad thing. The thing that made me, like, dislike the movie. I wouldn't even give it a terrible grade. I just don't think it's up there with some of the other animated movies that I've seen in the past.
Yeah, I think it would have been cool too to see the Road Blasters car appear in Sugar Rush. Like, if, you know, Turbo / King Candy is, like, you know, destroying, you know, Vanilla Beast's car. And he's like, I'll finally be rid of you once and for all. Then here, he's like, no! There's the red car from Road Blasters with a big gun on it. Driven by Ralph.
You really don't remember that game?
Which one?
Road Blasters?
What was it for?
It was a sit-down game or a stand-up game. You drive a car and you get, like, a helicopter. Almost like, oh, it's like Spy Hunter.
But from back point of view, not above. It was bad.
And, like, a helicopter would fly by and you'd have to drive to pick up
weapons.
You could blow up the other cars.
It drove and it looked like Pole Position.
Yeah.
But you can blow up the other cars, like, with, like, guns and stuff like that.
I remember Rad Racer.
No.
I used to play this game for hours when I used to go to roller skating.
I had this on for the Nintendo, too. And I
most likely played it. I'm not recalling. It's not one of those, like, iconic games for me. But
that's a shame.
Just the other thing, I wish they would have gotten... I know they got a lot of, like, character licenses for the movie. I just wish they would have got more licenses as far as game worlds. Because I felt like they spent way too much time in just that one world. And then they only really visited was... the Wreck-It Ralph game and the Hero's Duty.
Have you guys played the Wreck-It Ralph, the Fix-It Felix game online?
No, not yet.
It's fun. It's like Donkey Kong or...
Yeah, it looks kind of like a Rampage style game.
Yeah, something like that. What do you guys think about the voice acting? You know, I really like Jane Lynch as Calhoun, you know?
Yeah, she was good.
And her story arc with the wedding,
and
that
the
was
bugs.
Funny.
That was good.
I liked, like, the payoff at the end where, like, you know, she's getting married to Fix-It Felix, and there's they're doing their vows. All the Marines all point their guns at the window waiting for a bug to come through.
That was good.
Like, all right.
Oh, how about President Palmer, huh?
That was awesome.
Yeah. That's from 24. You haven't watched
No,
that.
I actually recognize his voice. Oh. He does all the commercials
Allstate.
There, too. The Allstate.
Are you in good hands?
Yeah. I was completely expecting this movie was going to be full of, like, video game references. I mean, based on the trailers, I thought they were just keeping a lot of it, you know, hidden, like, so that, you know, you'd have something to see when you went to see it in the theaters. But, I mean, it just had a little, I think it's mostly my own expectations of what I thought I was going to get. It just didn't live up to it.
I have to give props to Alan Tudyk. He's the only voice I could not figure out.
Yeah, he was King Candy.
As King
you know
Candy.
Who I honestly thought that was Ralph Garman.
So did I.
Me at first said, is that Ralph
Garman?
Too. And I was thinking, and I was like, I don't know, because he's kind of doing the Ed Wynn voice.
Yeah.
And I was like...
That's what I thought it was, too. And then, like, at the end, I was like, Alan Tudyk? Wash?
Mia didn't even get, and she's seen Firefly. She didn't know that was him.
Has John C. Reilly done other voices before?
Yeah.
Do you remember what? Because the man can't do any wrong, you know? He's really great.
I'm pretty sure he has.
I'm
like
looking
he has
through
too,
it.
But I mean, all of his characters are kind of cartoony, so I might be thinking
he was
that.
A nine.
Yeah, he was a nine.
He was a nine, yep.
Yep.
So, he was the Sasquatch and Tenacious D of the Pictus. I don't know. I just really enjoyed it. You guys want to do grades now?
Let's do grades.
Wallet?
I'll give it a B+.
Wow, man. I was going to give it a B-. That's not far off from you. Yeah, B-.
I give it an A, so that's a B+ average?
Yeah, B+ average.
Okay, B+ for Wreck-It Ralph. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Or you can follow us on our Tumblr page, which is firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
And please download our episodes on iTunes, and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions for movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. I think we'll be discussing a certain Bond film?
Yep, we'll be watching Skyfall.
Okay, then.
Also, keep an eye on our Facebook page and our Twitter feed, because with Oscar nominations coming up, we're going to have a little contest for you listeners. Details to follow. Win some cool FTW swag. That's the First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch and play video games.
Well, wait a minute, speak for yourself, motherfucker.
I roll a 3 for Arian Foster.
And I got Danny Granger. And I got Tony Parker.
Well, the only person I know of that group is LeBron James.
And I got Ray Allen.
I know Ray Allen.
Yeah, you know Ray Allen.
Okay. I probably should learn how to embrace basketball, because I forget it gives me something to do before, like, before and after hockey. Like,
or no hockey at all.
Yeah, exactly. Right now I've got no hockey again. I'm like, yay.
Every 5 years
I lose hockey. So maybe I could just try watching basketball just once. Be like,
do it.
I just imagine there's a goaltender in front of the hoop. When they shoot threes, I just imagine he just puts his stick up and goes, no.
and they score 100 points a game, 100 goals a game.
Oh my god, this is crazy hockey. And there's no skates.